Welcome to the In Conversation with Expo Stars podcast. I am Lee Ali, founder and MD of Expo Stars Interactive, an award-winning global live marketing and exhibition engagement agency. This is a podcast about leading the way in the live marketing industry and in business. In every episode, we speak to people around the world who do absolutely amazing work. You'll find an eclectic mix of stories and valuable insights on audience engagement, sales and marketing, mindset and well-being, business growth, and much more. We've been active in the live marketing industry for well over a decade now, and over that time, we've been very fortunate and privileged to have met and worked with a diverse range of inspiring business people. We ask them thought-provoking questions and share with you their valuable insights. We want to inspire you to transform your live marketing, engage your audience, grow your business, and enjoy the process. Happy listening. Hello, and welcome to episode number 2 of In Conversation with Expo Stars. And today we are joined by Ashley Baroda. I'm a practitioner, executive coach, and we're going to be talking about communication. As we all know, the world over the past 12 months has tremendously changed. The way we communicate has changed, and the pressure on businesses to create relationships through new medium, through virtual. Obviously, we've lost face-to-face. So everything has changed in terms of how we communicate. So today we're going to be discussing how we can use communication as a tool to build better relationships, to engage with our prospects and customers, and to obviously increase our relationships with our friends and family and build deeper, meaningful relationships. So let's introduce Ashley. Ashley, how are you today?
I'm very well indeed, Lee. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
Great stuff. So tell us a bit more about yourself in terms of, what you've been doing, your experience, and everything that we should know about you.
So I'm an executive business coach, and I work with business owners on whatever their issues may be. So I'm not a business consultant. I don't have a formula that I go with and would help them with that regard. It's whatever their issues are. If they have a problem, they also have the solution, and it is my job to dig it out and agree a way of overcoming it. So that's really what business coaching is. The other thing I do is I'm a practitioner, spelled IMA, little I, big M, big A. And it's a communication tool, IMA. In fact, in my view, it's the greatest communication tool ever invented, because it's all the things you've ever seen in psychometrics, except it's not psychometric. It doesn't have a test, which is a good thing. It just has a simple questionnaire, which only has 10 questions. So you get an immediate answer to say, this is your style. And it's very, very easy to understand. It's very, I can say, there's nothing complicated about it. It's straightforward. It's non-threatening. And I think on top of everything, it's actually really good fun as well.
Great stuff. So your background, I think I remember we met about 8-9 years ago, I think it was. And at that time, you were mentoring me on some and coaching me on some presentation techniques. Now, your background has been, obviously, you've been a BBC producer. You've managed comedy talent as well. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. All those things, which I assume was going to be my life forever. But I discovered that actually, when you go into the corporate environment, people's levels of communication are actually relatively poor. And bringing in professionals to do it on your behalf day to day is completely impractical. You have to be able to understand other people and learn to communicate to them in the way they want to be communicated with. Now, in an ideal world, they will return the favor. But if they are your customer or client, then you'll just have to live with that. If they don't, but actually in time, as they get to know you better, they will, as long as you don't have so much in the way of misunderstanding that you never get to that stage. And one of the things that IMA does is it makes people way more tolerant of each other and much more skilled in the way they communicate between each other, and therefore removing all the problems, which are communication breakdowns, which are happening constantly, mostly not on purpose.
Yeah. So talking about communication breakdowns, obviously over the last 12 months, we've had the pandemic. So what are the common things that you're finding over the last 12 months where people are really struggling with communication?
I think with regard to how they're struggling with it, obviously they are losing the fact that they're not seeing people in person. We all know that. Other than that, I'm pretty certain that all the communication problems they had in person, they're now moved online. It's exactly the same problems as they had before. And it's a case of understanding their style of communication and other people's styles of communication and doing what they need to do to match it up accordingly. So the problem is exacerbated because of how much more communication we actually now have in a day than we used to have. Because if you had, say, I don't know, I'm having like 4 or 5 meetings a day. That's more than I've ever had, simply because of time and travel time. So yeah. If I had 3 in a day, that'd be because they were all in a city centre somewhere, may it be Manchester or London, somewhere which I can walk between the two of them or jump on a tram or the underground or whatever it might be. But even then you come away thinking that's a lot of meetings in one day. You can't always hold all the information. Sometimes I'll be coming back from a meeting thinking, that was a really good piece of information that I've learned today, but I now can't remember which person said it from which meeting. So now you're clouding yourself with even more meetings than ever before, and that becomes even more of a problem. So yeah, apart from anything else, take loads of notes on every meeting that they're still legible 24 hours later, because otherwise you're in a situation where the meeting has been pointless quite a lot of the time. But you still have to concentrate on the fundamentals of communication. And those problems are getting worse because you're having more meetings. That's the reason. And the technology works really, really well for the most part. Each of them of those platforms has their own particular features. I personally think Zoom is the best one. However, talking to people is the same regardless of what platform you use. So that hasn't changed overall. The key difference, Lee, is there are just more meetings than ever before.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I mean, just on my own schedule, looking at this week, there's about 16 meetings lined up, and it's relentless. It's one after another, and the thing is, it's. Before, when you have face-to-face meetings or physical meetings in locations, you actually had some time to breathe and think about the meeting before you, go to the next one. And now, you put down one meeting and it's straight after to the next, so you actually have no gap there to actually mentally prepare for the next meeting.
Yeah, that's an issue. I'm looking at my diary today. This is number 2 of 5. So what happens when I finish last one finishes at 4:30 this afternoon? What will I remember? Luckily, this is being recorded, so I don't have to remember anything about this.
Brilliant. So let's talk about communication then. Obviously, we work So we work in the exhibition sector where engagement and communication is at the heart of building relationships. And obviously, we haven't had any exhibitions over the last 12 months, and it's been quite affected. So we've moved, a lot of businesses have actually moved online with virtual exhibiting and making connections through that way. So it is kind of hard. And one of the things that we were going to do together is go and talk at the exhibitor show in Las Vegas, which we hopefully are still doing at the end of October. We were going to introduce IMA. So let's talk about how IMA can actually help companies looking to connect with their target audience at exhibitions or even virtual exhibitions. So talk us through that process that you would recommend using IMA to engage with your target audience.
I think let me start by just explaining what IMA is and how it works. So everybody in the world is like 25% of the whole world's population in the way they communicate, which is fantastic news, because it's nearly 2 billion people are like you in the way in which you communicate, which is fantastic. The flip side of that coin is that there are 6 billion people who are not like you. There is another 2 billion people who, when you're honest about it, you find really annoying, and that is also how they feel about you. So learning how to communicate with them is important. And it divides into four. We have two groups of assertive people, people who are willing to put their opinions forward, people who like to work at pace and think in the future, and non-assertive people who do the opposite of that. And then we divide again into left brain thinking people and right brain thinking people. Left brain thinking people are convergent thinkers, and they're logical and they're self-contained, and they don't need to share all their thoughts and feelings with lots of people, nor do they need huge amounts of collaboration and congratulations. On the other side of that coin are open people who actually talk to anybody about anything and do need that level of congratulations and like to collaborate. And which two of those four things you are, a left brain or a right brain thinking person, or we can call them self-contained, or open or assertive or non-assertive, decides your style. And they're color-coded red, yellow, green and blue, but Eimer intentionally, very intentionally, calls them high red, high yellow, high green, high blue, because we know that everybody is a blend of all four, but you have one highest color. So you don't choose it, you're born with it, you can move about, but you will reset to it. I always say about my height, although I didn't, I grew into my height as opposed to being born with it, I didn't choose it, and I can't alter it. I can stand on a chair, but that's just me at my height stood on a chair, or me down on my knees is just me down on my knees. I'm still the same height. So therefore I will reset back to my height once I'm stood, and that's the same with an Eimer color. So we know that people have Eimer colours. We also know jobs have Eimer colours. And this is the really important part, is that there are jobs that are either task-led or they are relationship-led. And left-brain thinking people do task-led jobs better, and right-brain thinking people do relationship jobs better. It's as simple as that. So therefore, when you're exhibiting, you want to decide, actually, to begin with, what am I looking for? Mostly relationship, right? On the stands, that's really what you're looking for. So you're looking for right brain thinking people. You're looking for high yellows and high blues. If on the other hand, you're deciding that there's a task-driven job, then you're then simply looking at high reds or high greens. Then you need to decide. So we decided, say it's a relationship-driven job. We need to ask the next question, which is to work out if we need an assertive or a non-assertive person for that job. Now, non-assertive people are brilliant at jobs that need close consideration and got time to think, and they really go deeply into information, whereas assertive people are always moving forward at pace. So either you need a self-starter for this job, or you need a completer finisher. So then you have to decide, well, let's say we're saying it's a self-starter from this relationship-driven right brain thinking job, you're then left with a high yellow. So then you know that you're recruiting high yellows to do a certain job on your stand. Now, if you've got somebody collecting data on there, ideally a high green would be a brilliant person, but it's still a relationship-driven job. So you'd put a high blue in their place, because you want people who are willing and happy to have conversations with people all the time, all day, every day. If it's a 4-day exhibition, it is relentless. But although they might be tired at the end of the day, there's no resentment from right brain thinking people, because relationship is what they do really, really well. Give them a task driven job for that length of time. They won't be that great after sort of a day and a half, at which point you'll need to replace them with left brain thinking people. As far as your target audience is concerned, then that's a case of deciding who it is you need to attract and for what reasons. And works along the same basis. Is this something that's high tech and therefore task driven? Therefore, I might have to talk to people who are left brain thinking. And the best people to do that are other left brain thinking people. I've had a situation with a tech company where, although their sales team is predominantly high yellow, which would be right, they did have a high green person in there for reasons to begin with. I wasn't entirely certain, but we did help a big piece of business get over the line by getting a high green to have a conversation with a high green. Yeah. So high greens are non-assertive, they're left brain thinking. And there was no sales traditionally didn't happen, but a conversation happened and the sale did happen. No one was glorifying the product. They were just answering questions, which the High Yellows found difficult to do with this particular person, because he wasn't getting the information from them that he needed, and they were losing patience because they wanted to move on to something else. So then you target accordingly, but it's a great way of working out. Is it task-driven? Is it relationship-driven? Do I need someone who is a self-starter or a completer finisher? And it tells you the type of person you need for that job.
Great stuff. I think that reminds me of a story we had, a situation we had a couple of years ago. We had an exhibition. We actually placed two of our expo stars at the front of the booth. And our client was a high green. And our engagers were high yellows. And there was a situation where our high yellows were obviously going through the processes. They were actually engaging people, and they found out that some of the things that they were being asked to do or say weren't actually working. And because the project manager was actually high green and the booth manager was high green, there was a bit of a conflict. And when our engagers got into a conversation with the high green manager, there was a conflict of interest, because the high green wanted to, you know, because they were, you know, fat driven and they wanted more analysis, they said, well, I'll just have to take a bit more time to actually think about this. And the changes that my yellows were actually suggesting, you know, weren't made immediate. So I think that's a very good example of somebody who's very analytical, okay, and is very fact orientated, not actually being in tune, okay, with a high yellow whose, you know, pure task is to actually go and build those relationships. So have you seen many of those situations?
No, but the other key thing there is the pace. So yeah. You've got a live event, so yeah. Things are constantly happening live. You haven't got time to go away and think about it. If you're going to go away and think about it, it should have been done long before the exhibition started. But once it started, I'm pretty certain it's not a place for high greens, an exhibition room. I just don't think so. Yes, as customers or people visiting, but running a stand, I'm quite happy to go out on the limb to say it's not a job for high greens. I also think it's not especially a job for high reds either. They've got a situation where they can come along and point out what you're doing wrong and what needs to be changed tomorrow and all that type of stuff, which is fantastic. No one does it better than them. And they're quite clear about their instructions and they're clear the pace in which they want you to do it. But actually, when it's the ongoing chat of relationships, then it must be right brain thinking people. And I've done this in McDonald's restaurants where we tested out if we only put right brain thinking people in the dining area, what the response is from the public. And the public love it. They absolutely love it because they give feedback. They actually get things to fill in to give feedback. But the other thing they're not seeing is, of course, is if you're only putting high yellows and high blues, right brain thinking people in the dining area, you have to be putting high reds and high greens somewhere. And that is stuff you don't see face to face, but they're doing that absolutely brilliantly. And that's actually part of the whole process. If you get people really nice to you when you come in, but everything you order is not correct or slow, you're not going to say it was a good experience. But equally, all those things could happen if you mix those people in the wrong places. And one manager said to me, but surely we could put, I'll quote him exactly, surely a high red and a high green could work in the dining area. And I say, of course they could, but they probably don't want to. And they're not going to enjoy it as much. And therefore, eventually, within hours or maybe minutes, a high green is not going to want to look at every single customer that walks through the door in the eye.
Yeah.
And at some point, a high red's going to say, this is a name conversation about nothing. This is a waste of my time. And they might say something that you as an owner of a business regrets that they might say to their customer. And again, it's out of frustration, not out of deliberate rudeness or any of those things. So, you know, people have IMA colors, jobs have IMA colors, and we should pay far more attention to it. Apart from anything else, it makes people happier in their job. If they're happy doing their job, they do it better. The customer likes it because they get a better service. which means they use the organization, company, business, whatever it might be, more often. They also recommend it to other people. The company benefits because their turnover is greater. I'm always careful not to say profit because I have no idea how people run their business. But also what happens is that the company can then retain that staff because they're happy doing that job, which is even if they keep increasing salary, if it goes along with the increase of business, that's going to work. It's far, far better than losing them and having to re-employ, which, of course, a lot of people get wrong. At that stage, they'll get it wrong, and then it will be a massive problem.
Yeah, I think that's what happened with me when you first introduced IAMA to myself. So we went, I'm not sure if you recall, but we went through that process.
Oh, Lee, as you know, I tell this story in my training every week, so they have to recall. I haven't told it for about 5 days, but I will be telling it again in 2 days' time, so 3 days' time. So, yes, I recall it very well. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, good stuff. So the ideal team then, how does a business manager or a business owner, what would you suggest is the best way to build their team based around the IAMA strategy?
So the idea is, to begin with, don't worry about the people, worry about the job. Okay. Give the job the IAMA colour and then recruit that way. So if you know then it is a task-driven job, you need a self-starter, you know you're looking for a high red. So then what you do is you use words and phrases which IAMA can help you with that are specific to high reds. And the second best thing about this exercise is, and I'm going to ask you in a quiz in a moment what you think the best thing is, but the second best thing about this exercise is that the vast, vast majority of people applying for the job are high red. So the second best thing is it filters down to the people who you want to apply for the job. What do you think the best thing is?
My mind's gone blank, so share it.
The best thing is it filters out all the people who you don't want to apply for the job. So it's going to save you time and effort, and also stop, if you don't concentrate and employ the wrong person, for employing them for the wrong reasons. So the mistake I've seen time and time again actually isn't between high reds and high blues, but between high greens and high yellows, where the job actually, had it been worked on IAMA, you'd say, right, this particular job is task-led and needs a completer finisher, which means only high greens can do it to the standard that you need it doing. The only thing is they're not going to interview in exactly the same way as high yellows do. So if you put everybody in the mix and you're judging them on an interview, although that type of interaction is actually not part of the job at all, you will get a high yellow. I've seen it over and over again. And the employer always says to me, yes, but they interviewed well. And I said, but they're meant to, right? That's what high yellows do. They talk. Always when we break down the meeting, what happened, who said what, the very, very quite predictably with high yellows is you're interviewing them, or so you think, but they're interviewing you. That's what happens. Yeah. And so therefore you give them the job. They're brilliant at getting through the probation period, but then after that, it all starts falling apart. And then the actual cost, the real cost is hundreds of thousands of pounds because of lost productivity and then having to replace that person. And the likelihood is that you will make the same mistake again, thinking it is each individual that's the problem, not the process in which you use to recruit. So that's really, really important. So what I'm advising all business owners, all managers, is to work out really what is the job involving. Is it task-led or relationship-led? Are we looking for a self-starter or a completer finisher? If you answer those two questions, you'll know which IAMA colour person you're looking for. Then once you've narrowed it down, how you narrow it down to whom you want is obviously their business. But equally, what I would be concerned about is then how they go about recruiting them. As I've said, there's no point recruiting a high green in a one-size-fits-all solution. And I would say that's fair for high blues and high reds probably as well. High yellows, yeah, interview them, because that's the jobs they're going to be doing, is talking to people. You want to know how good they are at that, aside from anything else. So you have to have a different process for each IAMA colour.
Brilliant. Yeah, as a business owner, I can verify the fact that, you know, one of the biggest mistakes I made was going after people or hiring people that I personally liked or who I actually saw as, you know, a kindred spirit to me, for example.
Yeah.
Who, you know, and that can be.
And that's what happened. That time you phoned me and said,
"Yeah,
what I'm a colour do I need for this job?" And I remember I said high yellow, and you said I've shortlisted three high reds, yeah. And that's because you're high red. I said that at the time, and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Because people do reflective recruiting all the time where they have someone who's like them. But the issue being is you've already got you. So why duplicate you? You need someone who can do the things that you can't. However, and this is the important thing, I'm a high yellow. So high greens do all the things I can't do really, really well and vice versa. And that's why it should really work. But the problem is we have no commonality. So therefore, we find each other really quite frustrating. So you have to sit down and have an IMA strategy about how it is you're going to communicate. So my promise to that high green is, yes, I will contact you in email and I will spend time thinking about it slowly, checking that there's no mistakes in my email and give you chapter and verse. And if you still have a question after that, I will accept that. I'm not going to get frustrated by that. I will answer that in the same way until you're satisfied. And they will be happy with that. The difficulty for them then is when you have to talk to me, pick up the phone and have a word with me for a few minutes. Right. Yeah. That's all I want to do, including talking inane nonsense just to warm me up and then get straight to the point. So in 3 minutes, you can be out of that conversation, which I don't think they'll have a problem with. But the idea of them picking up the phone and talking to me is something they're going to have to train themselves to do in the same way as I have to sit and write a long email, something I really, really don't like doing if I can avoid it. So therefore, you have to have a strategy for high reds and high blues. Same things apply, but here you've got one group of people who are very assertive and one group of people who are not assertive at all. And therefore, one has to dampen down their assertiveness and the other one has to try and up theirs, which is much more difficult that way around, I think. Yeah. And you still have to work out a strategy. Otherwise, it won't work. But there's no point recruiting more of you when you've already got you. Because a duplication is really, really expensive.
Absolutely, that's a great point. And I think that's where the M and the A in the IMA philosophy come in. You have to have the intelligence to be able to modify and adapt your own communication style to other people. I think so. There's always, as with any communication, it's that give and take, isn't it? So you have to modify, you have to obviously first identify yourself in terms of what kind of person you are, and then obviously understand the other person, actually have that give and take. You have to be able to modify your own behavior to suit the other person. Do you find, I mean, which of the colors find that most difficult to do? Is it the reds or is it the greens and the blues, would you say?
I don't think I know the answer to that particularly. I think everybody to begin with struggles with it, and then it becomes habit. And if they know that there is then a cue that, okay, the cue is I have to communicate with somebody. The reward is going to be successful communication. So the trigger, the bit in between, is I'm going to have to change my communication to fit with that person. And occasionally you're going to get it wrong. I had a situation where I was convinced somebody was a high green and they were a high red. So in fact, I was feeding them way, way too much information. So that communication wasn't working. But instantly, when I realized and changed it, it was great, instantaneously great. It didn't matter that I'd made a mess of it for the previous 10 days or whatever it was. After that, it was quite clear, direct to the point, because their high reds are very, very time aware. Their own time is an issue. They decide more or less, they set the agenda on how much time you've got with them. Yeah. And then I got to realize this is why I knew that he was high red, this person, but also by his email communication. It was very direct. It just said my name and then a few things. It didn't like ask me any questions. I love it sometimes. I met a high yellow actually that's so good last week that she knows how to email high reds that, she writes things like Monday, this high red sending out emails today that say, I trust you had a good weekend. How do they know? But the point being is, they don't really want to ask you a question if you had a good weekend in case you answer them, because time is important. So it's a bit like, trust you had a good weekend. I have mentioned the weekend, now down to business. And that's when you know you're talking to a high red. So reply to them in that way. One of the things I try to help high blues with, because I say with a high red, you need to be much, much more assertive. And they will say, yes, but we don't want to be rude to anybody. And I'm saying a high red won't notice. That's the point. They want you to be that assertive. But then you have to tell high reds, you're going to have to calm it down in reverse. Now, high reds are unique because I think they're unique because I don't think there are many high yellows or high greens or high blues that are consistently going to come in conflict with each other. But high reds, because of their level of assertiveness, might well do. So two high reds, I was going to say two high reds walk into a bar. It's a bit like that. And they both have different they're different viewpoints on one thing, right? But the thing that's unique about them is that they're both absolutely convinced they're right. So therefore, that will be an issue. So they have to work on a strategy. They have to be aware of the fact how they come across, as we all do, to other people. Self-actualization.
Yeah.
And once you know, I can talk too much. I'm very aware of that. And suddenly I'm with a high red and think, right, stop, shut up.
Yeah. That's the thing with me. I mean, obviously I've got myself into trouble because, you know, as a high red, we can be quite stubborn in our thinking because we know that, you know, we are always right. So, and it reminds me of that joke. You say, obviously, all four colours have different perceptions of the same thing, okay? So it's that joke, okay? So you might tell that joke, why did the high red chicken cross the road? and the answers will be different, right? Completely. And it's
I think the better would be is, from an IMA perspective, is when did each of those cross the road, and then how, as opposed to why. Because a high green chicken is going to give it a lot of thought before they've made it, in which they will make it safely on that. A high blue one will also be making their mind up about if they should go at all on that, in that situation. A high yellow might just take the risk, and who knows what will happen. And a high red chicken will do it if it's going to make something better for them, right? That's what it will be. If they know it will make them, save them time, save them money, get on with it, that high red chicken is crossing the road. Otherwise, they'll go, I'm not crossing this road, and move on to something else. So there you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, good stuff. So that's great. So let's move into the real world. I know that you're doing a lot of great work with IMA in schools. So tell us a bit more about that.
Schools are an important place for IMA to be. That's my opinion, because secondary schools, particularly in years 7, 8, 9, where the classes are big, where everybody does every subject, which pretty much means that every class is going to have representations of all four IMA colours. Later on in years 10, 11, it might not be. If they've got a small class only doing one topic for GCSE, it could well be that you've only got one IMA colour or two IMA colours or three IMA colours, but probably not all four. But those years 7, 8, 9, you're going to have all four. It's true of primary school as well, but primary school is slightly different. You go into a secondary school, you're going moving about from class to class, doing topic after topic, and you've got a teacher who is going to teach in their IMA colour to people mainly who are not their IMA colour. So I think about my favourite subject at school, and it was my favourite right the way through, consistently. But some years I did better than others, depending on the teacher. Now, the teachers probably weren't any better or worse at teaching, because some of the people in my classes did really well with those people. In other years, they didn't do well with the teachers I did well with. That's because the ones I did well with were the same IMA colour as me. That, now I look back on it, that's exactly what happened. And the ones where I had a problem with were the ones who weren't. So therefore, it's important for me that teachers understand IMA, know their own IMA colour, become self-actualising, be able to identify the IMA colours of the people they're teaching, get the kids to learn their IMA colours of themselves and each other and the teachers, and then take it outside of the school for whoever's at home as well. I tell you what, it would make a huge difference to education. A lot of misunderstanding would completely disappear overnight. And IMA is something you want to do from people as young as you possibly can. And you want it to be mentioned, if not every day, every other day, right? Constantly talking about your IMA colour and other people's IMA colours. I am guaranteeing that communication will just go through the roof. Everything will be much happier as a consequence, because you become way, way more tolerant because of IMA. I was relatively intolerant of people who couldn't make decisions quickly or couldn't look me in the eye when they were talking. All those things that I considered to be failings are not failings. In the same way as if someone said, Ashley, you were too loud, you spoke too much, do you ever shut up? Whereas now I think it's funny, whereas before I'd be thinking, well, that's how you're meant to talk, right? What's the problem?
Absolutely. And, you know, just moving that scenario back into business, I mean, there are many times where, you know, you go into business and you're talking to a high green and they take forever to make a decision. And what's changed with me, for example, is when I'm doing a pitch now or I'm talking to a client and I see what color they are, then I actually know I don't get frustrated knowing that they are a high green and they will take a lot of time to actually make that decision. So I give them that breathing time, okay? And I understand I'm not going to get frustrated though that client is, he hasn't got back to me, blah, blah, blah. And now what I do is I structure the conversation in such a way that actually allows them time to, you know, discover more about the business, ask any questions that they have, and I actually give them as much detail as possible. And with a higher ed, I take a similar approach, and I know I will actually, if I get my information right, I will get an immediate decision. So let's move that into personal relationships then. Obviously, over the last 12 months, we've actually had the pleasure of spending much more time at home with our loved ones. Okay, what are the common things that you find in terms of, you know, why people get into conflict at home, for example, or have strained relationships? Talk to us a bit more about that, if you can.
Yeah, I'll end with this, actually, Lee. I think that obviously people in the home is difficult. In a family, almost all rules of anything go out the window, don't they? That's the problem. However, when people understand their IMA colour and other people's IMA colours, what they were able to do is things to avoid. So you know you're about to do something or say something and think, actually, they're different IMA colour from me. They are this IMA colour. This is how they will react. I won't do that. I won't say that. That's all it is. So in business, where I'm thinking about how I'm communicating to people, here I'm working out how not to communicate with them and just to avoid certain conversations, certain questions, and just leave it alone. Now, unlike in the business, once you've got the hang of IMA in business, you're very rarely making a mistake. At home, you're still making them because you're at home, you're relaxed, and it's an emotional place, and people are meant to be open with you. You are in close proximity to them, probably not as long or as often as you have in the last 12 months, but it's a way of looking and thinking, what am I not going to do as opposed to what am I going to do to avoid any sort of unnecessary conflict?
Brilliant. Well, Ashley, as you know, we could talk forever and ever. Thanks very much for sharing your insights into IMA. If you want to learn more about IMA, please visit www.expostars-ima.com, where you can actually take the questionnaire and find out what colour you are. And then obviously, if you want more details, if you want to ask questions, feel free to connect with myself and Ashley. Our URLs will be mentioned on the bottom of the podcast notes. Thank you very much again, Ashley. And join us again for the next episode, where we'll be talking to another expert in the world of communication. And thank you very much, Ashley. Great pleasure. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Lee.